Blog Talk Radio.
Live to see it, friends, and welcome to the World Transformed. This program is your guide to an astounding future that lies ahead, one that will be here sooner than you think, and one that you have an important role to play in bringing about. At the World Transformed, we want to introduce you to what may be the greatest transformation of them all, the one that begins with considering and acting on the almost limitless possibilities that lie before us, and that ends somewhere beyond the reach of the human imagination. So, when does this amazing future begin? Well, today is the day. My name is Phil Bauermaster, and with me in the virtual studio is my co-blogger, co-futurist, and co-host, Stephen Gordon. Hello, Stephen.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
Well, I am super fantastic. Happy Friday. How are you, my friend?
I am great. Glad to be here at the end of the week. Glad also that we're doing an entire Other Geek show.
That's right. You know, sometimes, every Friday, We geek out a little at the end of each show. We've earned it. We've worked hard all week, and we get to the end of the week, and we talk about geeky topics. But this time out, our amazing Wednesday show was so just chock full of other geek potential that we decided, well, let's just dedicate the whole show to them. In fact, it's almost like when we do a show like this, we could almost call it All Geek when you think about it.
Yeah,
I mean, that's.
Other geek concept is, you know, give us an opportunity to do, you know, we talk futuristic stuff all the time, but, you know,
right.
Truth is we have other things that we have interest in. And, but here, this is sort of a melding of this futuristic topic of aliens and our love of good sci-fi. So we get to do both.
That's right. We get to do both. Well, on Wednesday, we talked about what happens if we actually discover aliens, right? This is very much in the news. We're seeing increasing evidence that there may be alien civilizations out there. Nothing conclusive, you know. There's no smoking ray gun yet up to this point, but there is evidence that could be interpreted that way. So, what happens when we know for sure that there are aliens out there? That's what we talked about on Wednesday and explored some possibilities there, including one really, really spooky scenario that you had found on Reddit, which I think is going to be with me for a while. But tonight, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about what have we learned. You know, a good deal of our understanding of aliens, a good deal of our thought space around aliens, has to do with what we've read in books, read in comics, seen on TV shows, seen in the movies. You know, aliens are very much a part of our kind of, you know, mass unconsciousness. You know, we think about aliens all the time.
A part of cinema and stuff before the 70s, Phil. But, you know, the 70s, you know, UFO craze kind of, and then Star Wars and a few years before that, the Star Trek TV show kind of kicked that off, I guess, in a much bigger way than it had been before. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I would say the first time aliens really entered the mass media would have been Orson Welles' War of the Worlds.
Right.
It's cool. This is Halloween week, right? Because that was on Halloween back, I think, in 1938. Orson Welles did a broadcast of H.G. Wells' story, The War of the Worlds. He did it as kind of a reality show, kind of a fake documentary. And people who tuned in late thought they were hearing real news. And it created this great scare that New Jersey was actually under attack by Martians. I think that was probably the first time that there was kind of a widespread notion of aliens, right? The first time that it entered sort of popular culture, and you know, in the 40s. There were science fiction movies that, you know, again, before
the world. Which person thought that they saw canals on Mars? Which astronomer? That might have been one of the...
That Percival Lowell thought he saw...
Percival Lowell. And I think from that you had the Edgar Rice Burroughs, creating stories about, the Princess of Mars and all that. He had his Martian books and things like that. In those early days. But then, of course, as you said, Orson Welles, what he did, I think that really kind of brought it to the mass consciousness at that point. And it stewed there for a while, and then I think kind of it exploded in the 70s. Is that?
I think so. I think the baby boomer filmmakers sort of came online, aliens were part of their worldview. Right? They were a big part of how they looked at the world, and it showed up. It showed up in the movie. So if we start with the question of which fictional aliens are the most believable, right, and which stories, if any, portray a believable scenario for an initial human and alien contact, well, we got a lot to choose from, don't we? There are a lot of aliens that have shown us, a lot of movies that have shown us aliens, a lot of movies that have dealt with that critical first contact between.
I'm just looking at my list here, trying to decide which is the oldest here, and I think the oldest movie I've got on my list, was from 1969. I think.
Okay.
I think that
2001
is the oldest one I have, and that may be a function of the fact that I'm, of my age, and I having not seen as many of the great the older movies, but I saw Forbidden Planet, some of the other movies that preceded that, but. Those things are not on my list of movies that present interesting scenarios about aliens. The first one was 1969. So, what about yours? Looking back, that kind of how your list falls, or?
There definitely were big presentations of aliens in movies prior to 2001, A Space Odyssey. And of course, we never see the aliens in there. They're just this huge mysterious presence. But again, it was mostly they came to attack, right? Mostly it was in previous versions of aliens showing up, they were enemies who came here to undo us. There's one classic 50s science fiction movie that portrays a different kind of scenario, and I can't remember the name of it. Keanu Reeves remade it a few years back, and it'll come to me in a minute. But that one's a little bit different, where they're coming to tell us knock it off with the war, or in the Keanu Reeves remake, it was knock it off with the environmental damage that you're doing, right? So either aliens in previous versions came to attack almost always, or they came to school us. What was great about 2001: A Space Odyssey?
It's a day the Earth stood still. Thank you.
Yeah. That's the name of the movie. The Day the Earth Stood Still. What's great about 2001: A Space Odyssey is that the aliens don't really say anything to us. We discover artifacts from them, and we begin piecing together what they're up to and who they are to a very minuscule extent, but. It's kind of as we were discussing at the end of Wednesday's show, they're confounding, right? They're baffling. What they want or what we're supposed to do with the fact that we know they exist is not at all clear, is it?
Yeah. And you're speaking about the aliens in 2001?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those aliens, the idea there was that they arrived by way of von Neumann probes that crossing the vast distances, interstellar distances, just not doable for biological entities. And so what do they send? They send basically their civilization in a bottle, right?
Yep.
And across the stars. And a von Neumann probe got its name from Jean von Neumann. And he had this idea that that's how we would explore the galaxy is, basically put a virtual world in a tiny device that could be easily sent from star to star and it could be done cheaply. And I suspect that may be the way it's done. And that's the way they show up here in the 2001. I found that that was number one, how mysterious they were, their manner of getting here. I found it a lot more believable than most, than 99% of the way aliens are presented in movies. 2001 is, a lot of people find it so strange that they can't enjoy it, and so, and sometimes long stretches of quiet, and you know, to the point that they're bored or they don't find it compelling. I find it extremely compelling. I think 2001 is a masterpiece and should be seen by everybody. Even if you don't think you'll enjoy it, kind of force yourself to watch it as, and maybe get something out of it, even if you, it's not one that you feel the need to watch a lot.
I'll tell you, as time goes by, just as a movie, 2001 gets better because it stands in such contrast to movies the way they're made now. And, you know, I think the big criticism that it's boring probably belongs to an earlier era when movies were made a little bit more like it was. Today, if you look at, you know, I mean, if you look at how a typical movie that features aliens is made, I mean, it's just this nonstop barrage of physical and sound and, you know, plot development and dialogue, and to the point where I think I've mentioned that typically I get overwhelmed to the point of boredom, to the point of actually falling asleep watching action sequences in most superhero movies. It's like, it's just too much for me. I'm just, oh, it literally puts me to sleep. It's like, there's too much going on, and my brain will not deal with it anymore. This is like, you know, minimalism, you know, when you look at it from that standpoint, it's like, wow.
Well, 2001, it's sort of like, you know, when you're right up on it, 1969, seeing it for the first time, you know, it's this weird artifact of a thing.
Yeah.
Only, you know, it's like a mountain. You appreciate the magnitude of it the farther you get away from it, right?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's true.
It's huge.
If you go more recently for an interesting depiction of aliens, I see on your list you've got Contact from about 20 years ago, which is more nearly a, you know, kind of modern movie, and people would consider it a lot more accessible than 2001: A Space Odyssey. And interestingly, the aliens are in many ways more accessible too, right? They show up. The first thing they do is they start giving us blueprints for how to, you know, how to get in touch with them, right? Here's how we communicate. Here's how you get in touch. They're still very mysterious. And what we learn about them through the course of the movie is still, you know, huge, right? And cosmic and compelling and all that kind of stuff. But I think between the two movies, you probably lost some of that just absolute enigmatic quality of the aliens, right? They're not quite as enigmatic. When Jodie Foster finally talks to one of the aliens, it's like, for one thing, well, there's a whole full-blown conversation, and he tells her things, but also he appears to her as her late father. And so there's this kind of almost warm and fuzzy thing we get going with the aliens, right? It's like, well, they're nice, right? They talk to us in a way that that makes us comfortable, that makes us feel good. And if we're going to, you know, let me just jump to one of my other questions about this. You know, who would we most like to meet? Those would be really good aliens to meet, right? The one from Contact.
Yeah. So those are the aliens that they say, okay, you guys have a lot of development and growing up yet to do, but we want you to know that we'll be here for you when you're ready.
Right.
Those are the best aliens ever, right?
They are. I mean, we talked on Wednesday. You mentioned kind of the aspirational component, and these are the 100% aspirational aliens, right? They come and say, here's all this amazing stuff we can do. We want you to be a part of it, and we're going to step you through it slowly, you know, at our pace, not yours. We'll decide when you're ready for this stuff. But, those are the all-time greatest aliens, I think, in terms of that kind of stuff. Right in the middle there, right in between those two movies, you got Close Encounters of the Third Kind, where the aliens are, you know, they're somewhere in between in terms of mysteriousness. Do we really have any idea what they want? Do their motives even seem to make sense? Not a lot, but they're the nicest, I guess, of all, right? They just, you know, why are the aliens here in Close Encounters? To say hi, right? To spread love throughout the universe. I mean, it's a very almost hippie kind of version of aliens, isn't it?
Right, right. And very much a product, I believe, of Steven Spielberg's worldview. You know, that the problem is really us, not everybody else. And so
they're not scary.
We need to look at ourselves and improve ourselves, and then we'll be worthy of the aliens or the rest of the world. Even that was sort of that point of view for the United States, I think. And specifically that segment of the United States that Spielberg hailed from. But man, what a great movie though, right?
Well, it's a wonderful movie. It's a little confounding if you watch it these days. I think if you watch it with these issues in mind, you scratch your head a little bit, right? In terms of if you're trying to figure out these aliens, or you know. Their whole plan just seems to be a little, I don't know, it's pretty erratic. It's pretty idiosyncratic, these aliens. Wonderfully nice folks. Why are they messing with us, I guess, is kind of the question. There's no big plan to lead us into the stars or develop us technologically. Tiny hints of that in some of the exchanges, right? But there's one point where the communication goes full bore between the keyboard and the big alien synthesizer on the
what a great moment that is. I still get chills watching
that. It's amazing that where music is used to to bridge the gap, and
we're taking over, let's let the computer take over, it's going too fast for our musicians now, and they just and they flip that switch, and they just they're just full-blown blasting each other at that point. You know, you think, and we'll be years deciphering this, but let's just let them go, you know?
Yeah. But what the content of that is, or what the ultimate plan for humanity is, where humanity goes next, none of that's explored. None of that matters. The big message in Close Encounters is we're not alone, and it's a wonderful
And, you know, what's important is that that is not answered. It's almost important it's not. That's why, you don't ever want to see a sequel to Close Encounters.
I always think of E.T. as the sequel to Close Encounters.
Well, completely different kind of aliens. But E.T. is an interesting thing too. The aliens are not here for us at all. They came, from what we can tell from the inside of their spaceship, they're just kind of botanists or something. They're here collecting samples of the planet.
Picking up samples.
Yeah, they're scientists trying, hey, this is an interesting planet. It's got life on it. Let's take some samples and things like that. And oh no, we left one of ours behind.
Right.
Well, he's dead meat. That's too bad. Let's have we'll have a memorial service on our way to the next planet, and then they get a message to come on back because he's alive, right?
Right.
And in the meantime, he has contacted children. That's the interesting thing with E.T. is that they're not on the White House lawn. They're not. Take me to your leader kind of aliens at all, are they?
Well, they're not. It's not Devil's Tower either. Their interest in humanity is, in E.T.'s case, survival, right? And in the rest of the aliens who we barely see or know anything about, and just in getting their friend back. Humanity is something they were not supposed to interact with, and, they mucked up a little, and they just want to get their guy back. I mean, it's a real... hands off, apparently they're operating with some kind of prime directive or something like that. But the point of E.T., like the point of Close Encounters of the Third Kind, is, the ties that bind, right? It's the bonds that form between intelligent creatures, right? That we can be friends, right? That Elliot and E.T. can transcend interstellar distance and language and all other barriers and form this bond. That's just this.
I'm going to tell you, a test for a friend is to find out if they find that scene at the end of the movie moving. Because I want nothing to do with someone who doesn't cry at the end of E.T.
Well, okay.
When
spoilers.
Points at his heart,
you cry when he dies. Cry when he comes back.
Or
cries when he leaves. Right? There's three big tearjerker moments in E.T. I think. It all kind of works for me.
It's good to know. I can continue to be your friend then, Phil.
Oh yeah. Oh, that scene where Drew Barrymore is saying bye to him, and she's just a little girl. She's all choked up. I just wanted to say goodbye. Oh man, that It always gets me.
You know, Drew Barrymore has said that there was a large segments of the filming of that, but she was under the impression E.T. was a real creature. They did a good job that she, as a little girl, thought that he was, you know, a real alien or something, you know.
Wow.
They never allowed her to see, you know, the guy getting out of the costume or something. They would always, you know, be fully in character when she was brought in to keep the innocence of the interaction there, you know. And I doubt very seriously that many of the interactions were scripted at all.
Right.
But they got,
you know,
Drew Barrymore at that age was just childlike innocence the entire time, you know.
Yeah, she was amazing. Or it could have all been an act. She is a Barrymore after all, so it could have all been
just true that.
Just really good acting. But I think we got to put E.T. in Close Encounters to one side, because as wonderful as they are, it's like, okay, well, if the aliens show up like that, fantastic, right? There's nothing to worry about. The thing to worry about is that if they show up with hostile intent, and as we've mentioned, that's goodbye, right? It's like, okay, well, hopefully we get to make one last speech or something like that before they do whatever, you know, have their way with us. But if they show up and they're just mysterious, or if we encounter them and they confound us, we find them out in space maybe in the future. That is maybe the most intriguing scenario of all. And you mentioned at the end of Wednesday's show, you talked about The Arrival. Which is coming out soon. I don't suppose, have you read the story that's based on by any chance, the Ted Chiang?
I have not. Have you?
The Story of Your Life? Yeah. Yeah. Download it and read it, okay? It's not. I don't think it's going to spoil the movie for you, because you can just tell by watching the preview that they're going in a very different direction than how the story went. But I can tell you that the primary dramatic tension of the story is around solving this language problem. Right.
See that from the previews. That I mean, you know, what are they, when they mention a weapon? Are they threatening us? What's going? You know, what are they? What's going on with what they're trying to say to us?
Right. Right. I'll just tell you, because I don't think this is a spoiler at all. In the story, they're never really perceived as a threat, or if they are, it's just not a big deal. You know. And in fact, the setting isn't all that important either. You know, when you read that story, if you've never seen the trailer for the movie or anything, you're not picturing big special effects. That's what's interesting about this. You're involved in a very small personal story about a woman who happens to be interacting with a male, which is, you know, kind of the great thing about science fiction, short sci-fi, right? I mean, it's a short science fiction story. It's this wonderful, beautiful, sad kind of. Story about a woman interacting with aliens. Obviously, the Hollywood version is going to be sufficiently different that I'm not spoiling anything by telling you that. What's interesting is overcoming that language barrier doesn't solve everything that you want it to solve. There's an aspect of this that came out in a Star Trek: The Next Generation episode, Darmok, where they explored that from the standpoint of, well, it's like we can understand their words, but we still have no idea what they're right, what they're talking about, what they mean, because their whole language was based in this cultural understanding that we couldn't get at. It's like there's a difference between technically understanding what someone is saying and having any idea who they are and what they want. And that's the real tension in the story. I assume it'll be the tension in the movie too, but it'll be played out very differently than it is in the story. So I the movie looks awesome. So I'm sure I'm going to recommend the movie after it comes out. But right now I can definitely recommend, you can download, I think it's called Stories of Your Life is the collection with that Ted Chiang story. Check it out, because that gives you a glimpse into what happens when you encounter a mysterious alien. Not only what happens on Earth and, you know, how do we respond and how do we deal with the mystery of it all, but also what does it do to us, right? How do we change from the encounter? And it's pretty awesome, pretty amazing story.
Well, we're almost out of time, Phil. I can't believe we're running up against it. But I real quick want to just throw out some movie names and some reason why I brought them up. Star Wars: The Cantina Scene, of course, right? I mean,
yeah,
That's just sort of opened our eyes to what it'd be like to interact with, like, you know, a whole group of different aliens from all over the place in a backwater bar, right? So that was
right.
That was interesting. The Man Who Fell to Earth, David Bowie's movie, where he just being David Bowie turns out to be enough to be an alien. A pretty
yeah, you know, we don't need aliens. We got David Bowie, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And Jeff Bridges did his best to be Strange in Starman, and that was pretty great. What made that one interesting was the fact they were responding to an invitation sent by us on the Voyager probe, right?
That's right. And Starman is another good, warm, fuzzy alien with a love story,
yeah.
Like a romantic angle added on top, which is, taking it to the next level, I guess.
Enemy Mine is interesting because, you know, it starts out that we're, like, at each other's throats. But it turns out that, you know, with greater contact between one another, grows a mutual understanding between the races. And because these two people, one an alien and one a man, become such close friends, and he basically becomes a surrogate family member of this alien, right? Because
yeah.
of that, peace between the entire two races, it becomes a possibility. We don't know that for a fact that that's, you know, that, it, you know, peace breaks out at the end of that movie, but there's that hope, right?
There is that hope. That's a good one because those are aliens. It's a little different. We're out in space. They're out in space, and we encounter them, right? So it's we're more or less on an equal footing with those aliens. So it's a little bit of a Star Trek scenario, maybe a smidge more realistic than the aliens in Star Trek. Just because, you know, they're not just, you know, humans with funny ears or forehead ridges. So there's a whole language issue, and there's a whole, philosophical issue, and there's a whole biological difference that's really important. You know, the fact that these, I can't remember what they're called in the movie, but they don't have sex. They're all one sex, and they all just, you know, reproduce.
Yeah, babies just happen when it's time for it to happen.
When time to have a baby, you have a baby, which is a critical plot point in the movie. And another great thing about that one is also based on a really good science fiction short story. So it's always awesome when you see something that was, started out as a literary effort that kind of went in one direction and then ends up as a movie that expands on some of those ideas and gives you special effects and all that fun stuff too, which is also what we have going on with The Arrival.
Well, there's one more, Phil, I wanted to mention. You might have another one too, but I wanted to mention they're made of meat.
Mm.
I love that. I love that little short. It's sort of an explanation of the Fermi paradox in a way, right?
That is.
Aliens have come, they've seen us, and they leave because we're just that disgusting.
the original short story is just dialogue. It's just one
yeah.
alien voice and another alien voice responding. The movie adds a little bit in terms of –
It's really
listen.
Short, but we're like talking a five-minute movie here.
You get
but
some fun visuals. But the bottom line is humans are too gross. We're too disgusting for the rest of the universe to have to deal with. They've seen some gross stuff, but we're just too far gone, okay? It's not that we're violent.
This,
none of that
this
stuff.
Business
it's
of being
that
violent
we are nasty.
For our entire lives.
Yeah.
Just too much. They can't hang.
It's a bit like Agent Smith in The Matrix complaining about the smell, right?
Yeah.
It's just
exactly.
We're just that gross. That's the problem with humanity. Well, I know we're out of time, but we often run long on Fridays, and I don't want to miss out on what are the just real fast, if you got another minute, Stephen, what are the least believable aliens, right? You know, the aliens that we're not going to encounter, because I've got at least one really good example of those.
Well, pretty much any episode of Star Trek. I love Star Trek. Star Trek is a great television show and a good movie series, and they often deal with thought-provoking subjects, which is what makes it, I think, a good show.
Right.
But it's almost like the aliens are all just allegories for certain aspects of human personality. they don't even try to make them believable as aliens.
Right.
You know,
right.
You know, they take an attractive actress and slap a nose ridge on her, and she's Bajoran.
Now she's an alien, right.
Yeah, now she's an alien.
And we're going to learn something important about people from this story.
Yeah, that's right. It's always about
fine.
People. Yeah.
But we're not. It's not going to be that easy when we find aliens. That's, you know, that's the bottom line. They're not going to teach us lessons about humanity because they're so much like us. That would be cool if they did, but I doubt it. They're going to teach us lessons about humanity because they're so different from us. But I'm going to give the all-time dumbest aliens award, which, by the way, this would be a great other geek in its own right, and we might do a top list. But I'll tell you who's number one. Dumbest aliens in movies have got to be in the Mel Gibson movie Signs, right?
They come to our planet to take us over.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's a fun M. Night Shyamalan movie. It's got some real creepy moments. It's got some, you know, some really awesome moments going on there, tension and all that kind of stuff. But bottom line is, these aliens are not water resistant. Water is poison to them. And so they land on a planet that's two-thirds water. dumbest aliens of all time, okay? I mean, and they're not even wearing, like, suits to protect themselves from it, right? They're just
– Yeah.
They're out there. So,
no problem. Get yourself a super soaker and water gun.
That's right. You don't even need a ray gun to fight these aliens. You don't need alien technology. Yeah, squirt gun will – Squirt gun will get you there. If you don't have that, a spray bottle. If you don't have that, a garden hose, right? And you can repel the
a bucket, a pail of water.
You can repel the.
Like they did the witch in at the end of The Wizard of Oz. It's
pretty much
the dumbest alien.
Pretty
ever.
Much the same.
And it's not just that they're dumb inside the in universe dumb. The concept is dumb.
Yes.
And I think it was one of the markers that M. Night Shyamalan was losing it. You know, I mean, he started strong and just has gotten worse over the years, and that was one of the markers.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, they were finally just plot devices to create tense scenes, and somebody needed to read that screenplay and say, okay, this makes no sense. At least let's add a few things here. Let's throw in a few lines of dialogue that at least get this. Some
believability. Well, yeah, I mean, at least with War of the Worlds, it was like our viruses. That's a level of sophistication up from, you know, it's our water, you know, that
right.
You know, that it turns out that they just couldn't handle the common cold in War of the Worlds.
Even in the H.G. Wells version, when they came from Mars, if you get here from Mars, you really should be sophisticated enough not to do that. In the Steven Spielberg version, you know, they've traveled interstellar space, and they're not up for, like, fighting with microbes. That's pretty bad. Okay, they're the second dumbest. You're right. Okay, we could do this list. I'll tell you, we'll revisit this. I think we can come up with a few other, like, really dumb aliens, you know. I mean, just not too smart at all. The evil ones are dumb, which hopefully that's true, because if the evil ones are smart, which they would be, we're in an awful lot of trouble. Well, this has been.
Well, you know, we want to make sure that their book that says How to Serve Humanity is really not a cookbook.
That's not a cookbook. That's exactly right. Classic Twilight Zone reference. Okay, well, this has been fun. Of course, we could go on for another hour, but we've got another week coming up, and we've got new parts of the future to explore. So we'll have to come back to the subject of aliens and alien movies. Somewhere down the road. Stephen, it's been great fun talking with you about this. It's been great having you all with us, and we will be back next week with three brand new shows. And until next time,
live to see it.